Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. So we can repeat. Okay, so now we have Srila Prabhupada's purport. So like I said, please everyone read along. It's a long purport. But Prabhupada gives many amazing points. And actually, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam is a purport on these four verses. So Prabhupada has every right to give a five-page purport when all 18,000 verses are actually a purport on these four verses. These are the seed verses of the whole Bhagavatam. And actually, I was just reading a letter the other day. Devotees were asking Prabhupada about quality of chanting. And Prabhupada said, what quality, you know? Quality means that you do it and you can't stop doing it when you're doing it like Haridas Thakur. He's chanting and he can't stop. That means quality. So what is your quality? At the moment, you're doing it forced. And then he said an interesting thing about his writing. He said, similarly, my purports, their quality, because I can't live without them. Prabhupada said, I can't live without them. I wake up at 1 a.m. No one forces me to get up and do this, but I do this. I can't stop. I can't live without these, he said. So he said, that's why their quality, that's why people appreciate these purports, because I can't live without it. So that's quality. So these are Prabhupada's, this gives you an insight into Prabhupada's taste for his writing. He said these purports are his ecstasies. Very, very special that we have these. Okay, so purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the previous verse, it has already been concluded that in any stage of the cosmic manifestation, its appearance, its sustenance, its growth, its interactions of different energies, its deterioration and its disappearance, all has its basic relation with the existence of the personality of Godhead. And as such, whenever there is forgetfulness of this prime relation with the Lord, and whenever things are accepted as real without being related to the Lord, that conception is called a product of the illusory energy of the Lord, because nothing can exist without the Lord. It should be known that the illusory energy is also an energy of the Lord. The right conclusion of dovetailing everything in relationship with the Lord is called yoga maya, or the energy of union, and the wrong conception of detaching a thing from its relationship with the Lord is called the Lord's devi maya, or mahamaya. Both the mayas also have connections with the Lord, because nothing can exist without being related to him. As such, the wrong conception of detaching relationships from the Lord is not false, but illusory. Misconceiving one thing for another thing is called illusion. For example, accepting a rope as a snake is illusion, but the rope is not false. The rope as it exists in front of the illusion person is not at all false, but the acceptance is illusory. Therefore, the wrong conception of accepting this material manifestation as being divorced from the energy of the Lord is illusion, but it is not false. Interesting point is, illusion is the thing is actually there, but we just mistake it. We don't see it properly. So like Prabhupada is saying here, you see a rope and a snake, but we see a rope, or we see a snake, but it's actually a rope. So actually it's Krishna, but we just don't see it. Okay, continuing the purport, sorry. And this illusory conception is called the reflection of the reality in the darkness of ignorance. Anything that appears as apparently not being produced out of my energy is called maya. The conception that the living entity is formless, or that the Supreme Lord is formless, is also illusion. In the Bhagavad Gita 2.12, it was said by the Lord that in the midst of the battlefield, that the warriors standing in front of Arjuna, Arjuna himself and even the Lord had all existed before. They were existing on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and they would all continue to be individual personalities in the future also. Even after the annihilation of the present body, and even after being liberated from the bondage of material existence, in all circumstances the Lord and the living entities are individual personalities, and the personal features of both the Lord and the living beings are never abolished. Only the influence of the illusory energy, the reflection of light in the darkness, can by the mercy of the Lord be removed. In the material world, the light of the sun is also not independent, nor is that of the moon. The real source of light is the Brahmajyoti, which diffuses light from the transcendental body of the Lord. And the same light is reflected in varieties of light, the light of the sun, the light of the moon, the light of fire, or the light of electricity. It's another interesting point by Prabhupada. The origin of light is actually Krishna, and the effulgence of his body, which is diffused through the Brahmajyoti into the material world. Continuing, so the identity of the self as being unconnected with the Supreme Self, the Lord, is also illusion, and the false claim, I am the Supreme, is the last illusionary snare of the same Maya, or the external energy of the Lord. The Vedanta Sutra is the very beginning, in the very beginning, affirms that everything is born from the Supreme, and thus, as explained in the previous verse, all individual living entities are born from the energy of the Supreme Being, the personality of Godhead. Brahma himself was born from the energy of the Lord, and all other living entities are born from the energy of the Lord through the agency of Brahma. None of them has any existence without being dovetailed with the Supreme Lord. The independence of the individual living entity is not real independence, but it is just the reflection of the real independence existing in the Supreme Being, the Lord. The false claim of supreme independence by the conditioned souls is illusion, and this conclusion is admitted in this verse. Persons with a poor fund of knowledge become illusioned, and therefore the so-called scientists, psychologists, empiric philosophers, etc., become dazzled by the glaring reflection of the sun, moon, electricity, etc., and deny the existence of the Supreme Lord, putting forward theories and different speculations about the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of everything material. The medical practitioner may deny the existence of the soul in physiological body construction of an individual person, but he cannot give life to a dead body, even though all the mechanisms of the body exist even after death. The psychologist makes a serious study of the psychological conditions of the brain, as if the construction of the cerebral lump were the machine of the functioning mind, but in the dead body, the psychologist cannot bring back the function of the mind. These scientific studies of a cosmic manifestation or the bodily construction independent of the Supreme Lord are different, reflective intellectual gymnastics only. But at the end of the day, they're all illusion and nothing more. All such advancement of scientific knowledge in the present context of material civilization is but an action of the covering influence of the illusory energy. The illusory energy has two phases of existence, namely the covering influence and the throwing influence. By the throwing influence, the illusory energy throws a living entity into the darkness of ignorance, and by the covering influence, she covers the eyes of men with a poor fund of knowledge about the existence of the Supreme Person, who enlightened the Supreme Individual Being, Brahma. The identity of Brahma with the Supreme Lord is never claimed herein, and therefore such a foolish claim by a man with a poor fund of knowledge is another display of the illusory energy of the Lord. The Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita 16:18-20 that demoniac persons who deny the existence of the Lord are thrown more and more into the darkness of ignorance, and thus such demoniac persons transmigrate life after life without any knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada is giving point after point how everything is coming from the Lord, and everything that is existing outside of that or not in relationship with that is actually illusion. And now Prabhupada in the second part of this purport is going to establish how everything is coming from Krishna, and how we can see this in practical life. So Prabhupada says, the sane man, however, is enlightened in the disciplic succession from Brahmaji, who was personally instructed by the Lord, or in the disciplic succession from Arjuna, who was personally instructed by the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita. He accepts this statement of the Lord. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvan pravartite iti madva pajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. The Lord is the original source of all emanations, and everything that is created, maintained, and annihilated exists by the energy of the Lord. The sane man who knows this is actually learned, and therefore he becomes a pure devotee of the Lord, engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Although the reflectory energy of the Lord displays various illusions to the eyes of persons with the poor fund of knowledge, the sane person knows clearly that the Lord can act, even from far, far beyond our vision, by his different energies, just as fire can diffuse heat and light from a distant place. In the medical science of the ancient sages, known as Ayurveda, there is a definite acceptance of the Lord's supremacy in the following words. I'll skip this Sanskrit. There is one Supreme Person who is the progenitor of this cosmic manifestation, and whose energy acts as Prakriti, or the material nature, dazzling like a reflection. By such illusionary action or prakriti, even dead matter is caused to move by the corporation of living energy of the Lord, and the material world appears like a dramatic performance to the ignorant eyes. The ignorant person, therefore, may even be a scientist or a psychologist in the drama of Prakriti, while the sane person knows Prakriti as the illusory energy of the Lord. By such a conclusion, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, it is clear that the living entities are also a display of the Lord's superior energy, Paraprakriti, just as the material world is a display of the Lord's inferior energy, Aparaprakriti. The superior energy of the Lord cannot be as good as the Lord, although there is very little difference between the energy and the possessor of the energy, or the fire and the heat. Fire is possessed of heat, but heat is not fire. This simple thing is not understood by the man with a poor fund of knowledge, who falsely claims that the fire and heat are the same. This energy of the fire, namely heat, is explained here as a reflection, and not directly fire. Therefore, the living energy represented by the living entities is the reflection of the Lord, and never the Lord himself. Being the reflection of the Lord, the existence of the living entity is dependent on the Supreme Lord, who is the original light. This material energy may be compared to darkness, as actually it is darkness. And the living activities of the living entities in the darkness are reflections of the original light. The Lord should be understood by the context of this verse. Non-dependence of both the energies of the Lord is explained as maya or illusion. No one can make a solution of the darkness of ignorance simply by the reflection of light. Similarly, no one can come out of material existence simply by the reflected light of the common man. One has to receive the light from the original light itself. The reflection of sunlight in the darkness is unable to drive out the darkness, but the sunlight outside the reflection can drive out the darkness completely. In darkness, no one can see the things in the room. Therefore, a person in dark is afraid of snakes and scorpions, although there may not be such things. But in the light, the things in the room can be clearly seen, and the fear of snakes and scorpions are at once removed. Therefore, one has to take shelter of the light of the Lord, as in the Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam, and not the reflective personalities who have no touch with the Lord. No one should hear Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam from a person who does not believe in the existence of the Lord. Such a person is already doomed, and any association with such a doomed person makes the associator also doomed. Okay, last paragraph. According to the Padma Purana, within the material compass, there are innumerable material universes, and all of them are full of darkness. Any living being, beginning from the Brahmas, there are innumerable Brahmas in innumerable universes, to the insignificant ant, are all born in darkness, and they require factual light from the Lord to see him directly. Just as the sun can be seen only by the direct light of the sun, no lamp or man-made torchlight, however powerful it may be, can help one see the sun. The sun reveals itself. Therefore, the action of different energies of the Lord, or the personality of Godhead himself, can be realized by the light manifested by the causeless mercy of the Lord. The impersonalists say that God cannot be seen. God can be seen by the light of God, and not by man-made speculations. Here, this light is specifically mentioned as Vidyat, which is an order by the Lord Brahma. The direct order of the Lord is a manifestation of his internal energy. And this particular energy is the means of seeing the Lord face to face. Not only Brahma, but anyone who may be graced by the Lord to see such merciful, direct internal energy can also realize the personality of Godhead without any mental speculation. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So an incredible purport. So many points, and we'll discuss some of them. But before we do, we'll say the Mangalacharan together. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Tarunbhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nivirshesha Shunyavadi Pastyatya Deshatarine Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So thank you everyone for this opportunity and seeking the blessings of all my seniors, which is majority of you. Vishwambhu, who is also here. Hare Krishna. And hopefully we can say something in line with Srila Prabhupada and my spiritual master. So like I said, this is an amazing long purport with loads and loads of points. And I'll just give a quick summary of the verses. Vrindavan Chandrabhu gave an amazing class on Friday, caught up with it online. But he basically gave a summary of these verses and he talked about the questions. So I won't go into all of that in detail. I'll just give a quick summary and then we'll discuss something on the verse. So basically, we've been reading the discussion between Brahma and the Lord. And the Lord became pleased and asked Brahma to... He told Brahma, ask for any benediction. You can ask for anything. I'm pleased. And so Brahma asked for four things from the Lord. Anyone remember those four things from Vrindavan Chandra's class? What did Brahma ask? Anyone remember? Yeah. So that was the second question. How do you create, maintain, and destroy the world by your energies? Anyone else remember any of the questions Brahma asked? Or benedictions? Yeah, very good. Tell me about the material and the spiritual forms. Your material and spiritual forms, what's the difference? Yeah, then that was the first question Brahma asked. Second question was what you said, how do you create, maintain, and destroy the world by your energies? And then the third was, anyone know? He asked, how do you perform your part? Tell me about your pastimes. And then the fourth was a benediction. He asked, please bestow me that your mercy upon me to carry out these instructions that you've given me. So the Lord answered the first question in the previous verse, which Vrindavan Chandrabhu spoke about. So he answered the question, tell me about your material and your spiritual forms. And now, Brahma's second question is about his maya or his energies. And so then the Lord is answering in this verse here, this second question of Brahma, all about the Lord's maya or the Lord's energy. And so these four verses form the Chaturshloki, which are the seed verses of the Bhagavatam. There's a song written by Bhaktisiddhanta. He says, Krishna hoite chaturmukhya, hoi Krishna sevan mukha, Brahma hoite naradeya vyasa. So he says that Brahma, the Lord spoke these four verses, and then Brahma took these verses and he expanded it, and he gave them to Narada Muni, and then Narada Muni took these verses and he expanded it again, and to Vyasadeva, who then wrote the full Bhagavatam. So basically, Brahma got these four verses from Krishna, and then Brahma came up with 10 concepts, 10 main concepts of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which he then gave to Narada Muni. So he gave these 10 basic concepts of the Bhagavatam. Then Narada Muni took these 10 concepts and he explained to Vyasadeva further, and Vyasadeva then wrote these 8,000 verses. So I was saying at the beginning, Prabhupada wrote a long purport, but the purport of these four verses is 18,000 verses written by Vyasadeva. So it's a very long purport, the Bhagavatam. And the first thing is really this beauty of this guru-disciple relationship, how everyone has a guru, everyone has submission to someone and they're learning from them and they're taking that knowledge and then they're passing it on, they're expanding it. So there's a famous verse in the Gita, Tadvidi Pranipatena, Pariprashnena Sevaya Upadikshanti Te Gyanam Gyaninas Tadvidarshina. So someone is submissive and they render service, then the Guru reveals that knowledge to him. And then every good disciple will take that knowledge and he won't just repeat it or kind of hold it to himself, but he'll actually expand that and give it in a bigger way to the next in the line. And that's a real good disciple, as we see here, that each time they're taking and they're expanding, And we see so many of our, in our line of acharyas, that's what they did. They took these verses, they took these different texts and they expanded on them. So we see Rupa Goswami, Sanat Goswami, they took Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's few verses, Shikshastikam, and they expanded on it and they wrote hundreds of books. And again, further down, all of our acharyas have taken these works and they've expanded them. And so this verse is talking about, actually let's just read the verse again so we can remind ourselves. The verse says, O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. So this verse is talking about how everything is connected to the Lord. And if we see it is not connected to the Lord, then it's Maya, then it's the illusory energy. And this is a real measure for our lives of the value of everything in our lives. We should be measuring things in the value of things by their relationship to the Lord. And this can be a transcendental calculation for the devotee. Is how valuable something is how it's connected to the Lord. And it's about training ourselves to actually do that. Because a lot of, we're so conditioned to valuing things by their material value or what we're going to get out of it. But we're actually here being told we should value things according to how closely they're connected to Krishna, how closely they're connected to the Lord. And in that way, life becomes simple. Because whatever has a purpose for the service of the Lord, we accept it. And if it doesn't, then it's not of any value to us. And from Krishna's side also, whatever is offered, if it without relationship to him, without devotion, then that's also of no value to him. So from his side as well, he doesn't see the externals. He doesn't see the value of something material. He sees what's behind it, the relationship, the devotion. So from his side, it's also the same. There's a famous verse in the Bhagavatam, Dharma svanustita pumsham vishrakshena katashriya not padayat yadi radim shrama eva hi kevalam. The occupational activities a man performs according to his own position are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the personality of Godhead. So basically this verse is saying service without love, service without bringing us closer to Krishna is actually a waste of time. It's a useless labor. Doing these duties, if they're not provoking this attraction, if they're not bringing us closer to Krishna, then they're a waste of time. And Bhagavatam is rejecting this just mechanical service or mechanical relationship. In the second verse of the Bhagavatam, it says that Dharma Projita Ketavo, the Bhagavatam is completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated. So the Bhagavatam is removing this or rejecting all of this, any religious activities which are materially motivated. And the Bhagavad Purana propounds the highest truth. That's this verse. So also we can maybe reflect how we can sometimes also miss the point in bhakti or miss the point of our devotional service. Bhuta Bhavanapur was giving this class the other day and he was talking about form and substance, right? How the form can be there, the activity can be there, the externals can be there, but if it's without the substance, then it's not really progressive. It's not allowing us to grow. I don't know. I had this throughout my life, but maybe some of you also experienced the same thing, that I just can't stand like small talk or meaningless conversations. Like sometimes, you know, you sit there with your nan and she's talking about the weather or something. There's nothing wrong with it. I just sat there kind of grinding your teeth. Like, it's kind of meaningless talk. It can be so frustrating. At least I've always found that. So it must be the same for Krishna. You know, we doing the externals without this. Jai Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Shri Gaura Nitya Ki Jai. So you can imagine for Krishna it must be the same. If we're doing these things, we're doing the practice but without the meaning, without the heart behind it, then it's just like grinding your teeth, you know, it's unsatisfying. And so I thought we could look at this a little bit, how we might be missing the point in bhakti or in Krishna consciousness. And I thought we could maybe, I liked Govinda Prabhu's class the other day, he got people to give ideas, so I thought we could do a little bit the same. So I want you to think of ways that we might miss the point in Krishna consciousness, do something externally, but the internal is not there, or the progress is not there. I'll give you one example to think, and then you can give some ideas. So one example would be going to a holy place and just going there to see it, but not meeting the saintly people. So there's a verse in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam that if you go to a holy place and you just see it as water, means the river's there, or you just go for the externals and you don't meet the saintly people, then it's a waste of time. So that could be one example. We just go on yatra, but we don't actually associate or hear from saintly people. So anyone else have some points how we might miss the point in our bhakti, in our devotional lives? Okay, Chaitanya Prabhu. Is there a mic? Yeah.
Being in proximity of senior devotees, but not actually opening up. You may have conversations with them, and they may try to sit down with you and like actually get you to open up, but not actually revealing your mind and kind of being submissive towards them, and you know, giving them the chance to really give you advice and things like that. Yeah. But you're just keeping your own opinions.
Yeah, not making the most of devotee association and allowing actually change. Often it comes from a lack of wanting to change. Normally we have the help there is available, but are we actually ready to submit to it? Yeah, thank you. There were some other points. Who had the hand up? Yes.
I was thinking of deity worship also. You know, we're concentrating on pujari service, we're concentrating on the deities, who can best serve them, but then a devotee comes, they need something. Like, no, you can wait. I'm serving the deities.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's explained that neophyte devotee just sees the deity but doesn't respect the other devotees around. Actually, Bhaktisiddhanta used to say this phrase. I got it written down. It's a Bengali phrase, Shalagram Dvara Badam Banga. So it means that the priests are taking the Shalagram deities and using them as nutcrackers. So the idea is that you're just using the deity worship as a means to get something, or just as a show. We want to be at the front. People are seeing us, we're offering the aarti or whatever. Or we're doing the Abhishek on Janmashtami on the main stage. So, if we're doing it just for business. So all of these different things, the acharyas are so strong on this that it's so destructive for our Krishna consciousness. Thank you. Yes, Prabhu.
Offering obeisances but not knowing why we're offering obeisances. Mm.
That's a good point. Yeah. So what does obeisances mean? Obeisances means actually the meditation is that Krishna's feet are coming on our head. That's why we're putting our head on the floor. And so we should actually be meditating behind it. And we should say the pranam mantras also. My spiritual master is quite strong this. He always says that if you don't say it out loud, it doesn't really work. Because we're offering obeisances to a personality, we should be greeting them, you know. Otherwise, there's no meaning behind it. Yes, Prabhu.
Food offered to the Lord and Mahaprasadam also. Like, I see so many devotees also, non-devotees also, they just accept it and sometimes they also waste it. Mm. Like, they drop it and, you know, they just keep it lying somewhere and then it dries up. So, you know, we should also have the importance of, you know, educating as well as teaching as well as understanding. The importance of prasadam, mahaprasadam, all of it.
Thank you.
Have you missed the point?
Definitely. Tarunavu has a point and then Karan and Nishkinshana.
It's a good point about prasadam. Just to add to that, if you leave anything, especially mahaprasadam on your plate, it's a totally waste, total low consciousness. Doesn't matter. If somebody gives you or you take yourself, and I've seen this card in a bean. That's a horrible mentality. Anyway, there's another point. Like, in ISKCON, which is a very common thing, call somebody Prabhu, or, you know, without, you just can't, Prabhu, or Haribol, Prabhu, like this, all this, like, jargons,
yeah,
which we don't really, not even think of meaning, what Prabhu is, and do you really feel this Prabhu,
yeah, Prabhu, yeah.
Like, and so many similar connotations, anyway.
Yeah, thank you. That's a good point. Yes, Nishkinishnavu, Karan Prabhu, Sankirtan Prabhu.
You know, you sometimes see a lot of devotees, but particularly a lot of congregation devotees on the weekend, they'll ring the bell when they come in, and then they ring the bell when they go out. So it's like, what's the point in ringing the bell when you go out? Because you don't ring someone's doorbell when you leave their house. So it's like...
Okay.
Just a point.
Thank
there,
you.
Yeah.
Let's maybe also focus on things from ourselves as well, not just what we see around us going wrong. But yeah, it's true. We should. We're not trying to announce our presence. Yes, Karen.
Sometimes we attend the Bhagavatam class or hear a lecture, and then if anyone asks after the lecture or class, "What did you learn?" I have nothing to say.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point, and maybe one thing I was thinking of as well was that we study or we hear these classes, but we don't actually imbibe the knowledge. We don't imbibe it. So we have many examples in the scriptures that devotees who studied a lot, but they didn't become humble, they didn't imbibe the knowledge. So we have one is Ramaharshan Sutta. When Lord Balaram came, he didn't offer respect to the Lord, and so he had so much learning. He was on the Vyasasan, and he was like the most learned in all of the philosophy, but he didn't actually imbibe that by offering respect to the purport of the Bhagavatam when he came. Also the same with the Yajnik Brahmanas, of the wives of the Yajnik Brahmanas. So the Yajnik Brahmanas, after they realized, after the wives came home and they realized their mistake, they said this amazing verse. They said, you know, to hell with my sacrifices, to hell with my learning, to hell with my austerities, to hell with everything, you know, I've missed the point. We're condemned because we were inimical to the personality of Godhead. This beautiful verse in 10th canto. So he says, what was the use? You know, we learned so much, but we didn't actually apply it. Yeah, it's a good point. Thank you, Prabhu. Paramakrindavu, you had a point? Yeah, Abhay Prabhu.
Doing kirtan just as a performance, focusing on the beat, the melody, the alaps and
yes,
whatnot.
Yeah, so not chanting the holy name, but not actually chanting the holy name. So there's a famous verse also in the CC. It says, Bahu janma kari yadi shravana kirtana, tabutana paya Krishna prema dana. So that we can be chanting for many, many lives, actually. We can chant the Hare Krishna mantra for many, many lives. But if it's infested with offenses, then despite our endeavors, we won't actually receive this prema dana. We won't actually receive any love. So actually, yeah, if we don't do it properly, then it can take a long, long time. So what's the point? If we're going to do something, we might as well do it properly. Okay, let's have one or two more points. Yeah, any Matajis? Yes.
Well, when I find that I don't understand why I'm doing something in terms of devotional service, and I'm just like, oh, I'm actually don't know what I should be contemplating on in this moment, because we're conditioned, our minds could, you know, run around. So it just feel like a waste of time if we're it's like inattentive.
Yeah.
Like any moments like that.
Yeah, but so really understanding
often,
the motivations behind Krishna consciousness. Yeah. Okay, maybe we can carry on. We've got a few minutes left. So one last thing I was thinking was association through physical presence, or thinking that we need to be close to people, but not through hearing. So that's another thing we might miss the point on. I'm going to skip a few points. Yeah, so in this verse, it's really about what we value, and what does Krishna value. This is what this in relation to me in this verse means. Krishna is saying that he values this only, this relationship, this love. And our activities have to become more and more in that line, more and more just towards Krishna, more and more to the point and not missing the point. In the Gita, Krishna says, Yat kadosi yadashnasi, yat jahosi dadasi yat, yat tapasyasi konteya, tat kurushva madarpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, whatever austerities you do, then just do it for me. We have to remind ourselves, we have to keep reminding ourselves of these principles. That what does surrender actually mean? We have to remind ourselves of that. I know for me, we hear it every day. It's like, I have to surrender. But then what does it actually mean, and how are we applying that? In the beginning, normally we're pretty good at making these steps to surrender, but then after some time we make so many of our own plans and it becomes our life again. And we miss the point of surrender. And that's why we actually learn a lot of these verses. And that's why remembering verses and learning verses is so potent, because there's a principle called tadatma, which means that whatever you associate with it rubs off, the qualities of it rubs off. So when we associate with verses, when we remind ourselves of these verses, when we learn verses, then actually some of the qualities from that verse, some of the principles in that verse rub off on us. So it's a powerful thing to learn verses and to meditate on verses. Prahlad Maharaj says, when Narasimhadev appears, he says, you know, the Lord says, please ask me for something. And Prahlad Maharaj says, this is not a business transaction. He said, I'm not here for something, you know, I'm here to serve. I'm a servant and you're the master, and there's no need for any other relationship than this. I'm satisfied. And he says, but if you do want to give me something, then the very famous verse, Yadi dasya sime kamam varamstvam varadarshaba kamanam hritya samrohan bhavatastu vrine varamda. If you want to give me something, then please make me free from all material desires in the core of my heart. And this has to be, again, another beautiful verse to just memorize, to remind ourselves of this, our focus in Krishna consciousness. And it's all about training our consciousness. We have to be conscious at every moment and remind ourselves at every moment not to stagnate, not to become kind of slack in our devotional service. We have to meditate. Is this pleasing to Krishna? Is this pleasing to Guru? Every moment, what am I doing? When I was in India, one of my spiritual master's disciples passed away, very young. He had cancer. But Maharaj was giving an interesting point that Prabhupada sent him for a mission, and his mission has finished, and therefore Krishna has taken him back. Even though it might not look like that, he has a young family and so many responsibilities, but according to Krishna, his mission is finished. But he then said that similarly, Prabhupada has sent all of you with a mission, and Prabhupada also said the same, that you've all been sent with a certain mission. And the way you can know that you're fulfilling your mission that has been given to you by Prabhupada is that you're following the orders of your spiritual master and you're pleasing your spiritual master. Then you know you're in line with Krishna's mission for you on this planet. So we have to be constantly conscious of that, reminding ourselves of that. And Prabhupada really wants us to take what he's given and expand it. Like in this verse we see Brahma took the knowledge from Krishna, he expanded it. Narada took the knowledge from Brahma, he expanded it again, and Vyasadeva took the knowledge from Narada, and again he expanded it. And like we were saying, all of our acharyas took something and they expanded it. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was thinking about Westerners coming to Mayapur, and at the time Gaudiya Vaishnavism was a handful of people in Bengal. You know, Bhaktisiddhanta would preach to all the leaders of the countries. Prabhupada also envisioned this worldwide movement. So in the same line of acharyas, we should also be thinking big. You know, Prabhupada, for the manor, he wanted 150 cows, he wanted a 21-story temple, he wanted the whole village here to be devotees, owned by devotees, he wanted 600 pastime places around the whole grounds. So he was thinking big for the manor, and we're doing good, but are we taking that, and are we also expanding it more than the previous? So that's what a true disciple means, like this parampara that we've been given. We can finish there, try to become a good disciple, and remember that this verse is all about everything in relationship to Krishna is good, anything not in relationship is Maya, but everything is actually Krishna, it just depends on our vision. And really cultivating that consciousness, that vision, is something we have to work at. So we can finish there. if there's any. So it's a bit of a slightly random class. There's so many things in the purport. It was hard to kind of pick one topic. So we spoke a few things. Is there any questions or comments? It's 8:30, so if anyone needs to leave, you welcome to. Yes, Virgin of Uva.
Can you help me with my memory? Because Prabhupada, when he did the preface, I think, for the Bhagavad Gita, he put Om Tat Sat after it to connect it to Krishna. And that seems... But I'm trying to think where that is. Is it in the Bhagavad Gita?
I think it's at the end of the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is, yeah. So that's just connecting everything to Krishna. Mm. Even one way or t'other, he seemed to... It's like a humble position for him, isn't it? He then put Om Tat Sat after.
Yeah. Yeah, Prabhupada was always connecting everything with Krishna. That was his solutions. Sometimes devotees became really bewildered about his solutions for things. Often Prabhupada and devotees have discussed this before, that Prabhupada, sometimes devotees would say, the temple is unclean, and Prabhupada would say, chant your rounds properly. Devotees like, how does that even connect? But then when you look at it, he's actually just relating it to Krishna, that if you chant attentively, then you'll be attentive in all the other aspects of your life, so naturally things will become clean. So, but he's just, the vision is just directly relating it to Krishna, and that is the source. Yeah, thank you. Any other questions? Comments? Yes, Mataji.
I was thinking that very recently I discovered that I'm a little bit fanatical. I'm finally, doing spiritual activities, I'm finally doing devotional service. So therefore, all the things that I find is a waste of time, I try to avoid it and I try not to engage with it. But then that kind of runs after you a little bit, because you have to deal with it somehow, but change it to look at it differently in relation to Krishna. Do you have some experience of that? Can you share as well?
Yeah, I think all devotees probably have this experience that when you first come, then everything's like, it's like all or nothing, And then over time you realize actually there's a balance that has got to be to properly live in the world and not fry everyone out. I think it's just a natural... I think most devotees seem to go through it. I'm probably still going through it. But that progress of coming to a steady place of living in the world and being a Krishna-conscious devotee and being able to preach effectively, but at the same time doing your duties and being a balanced human being also. But I think it's, a balance that comes over time of practice. I still think I'm finding that.
Thank you.
Tirunavu.
In the term of parampara and transmitting knowledge and expanding always, there's a big danger of watering down process. Actually, if you study Vyasadeva's expansion, that's also seems to me compromises, like for meat eaters, for example, for different sacrifices. There is even human sacrifices. And then also when we received, we mean like a constant expansion of knowledge is doomed to be watered down. And then in that regard, you have to water down, because as Kali Yuga is progressing and more people's minds are like a water, no strength. Mm. So to at least to give them small speck of advancement, these compromises, there is a place for that. But then on another side, there is a criticism of that. There is orthodox criticism. So I don't know, can you give any thoughts on that? Because definitely knowledge will be watered down.
Yeah.
It's kind of, in one place, is, in one side is a danger, another side is to reach those most fallen.
Yeah, it's such a delicate... Prabhupada said it requires intelligence, which means you need to be an advanced devotee to actually understand how to apply. But I don't think it's necessarily watering down, it's just being able to make it accessible, which might, like you said, might mean require that some of the principles are changed, or not changed, but adjusted to be able to be accessible to a certain population. We see that the acharyas did change the application of those principles, but the principles remained stable, the core principles. But yeah, Prabhupada said it requires intelligence. You have to be...
Most of the people, or many, cannot understand acharya's intention when they see this,
right?
Like instructions which only he knows.
Yeah.
So others, they just view it as something degrading, or, you know, subject to criticism. And
Yeah, it's very difficult. And yeah. Like even we saw Lord Chaitanya, we were just reading in CC that this verse, only two people understood the meaning of the verse. Only Surat Dhammadhar and Rupa Goswami could understand. Everyone else had no idea what Lord Chaitanya was speaking about. So for us, the safest thing is just to stick as closely as we can to what Prabhupada gave, because he understood what we needed, he understood what is applicable. So if we stick very closely to that, then we're safe. But we'll, yeah, over time also we're going to have to, advanced devotees are going to have to decide how to give it and apply it to the population. It's difficult. Okay, I think we can end there, unless there's anything else. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki, Tai Gaur Premanande, Hari Hari Bol.